Well, I think everything that specifically needs to be said has been said, and I just want to congratulate JTSA for bringing out this report and everybody else who has really worked in this field for many, many years. I mean, apart from those who have suffered in this process. So I don't know. It's difficult to know whether to be very specific or much more general. But since people have been very specific and have made these very specific demands, I think I'm just going to widen the focus a little bit. Because on the one hand, though we are expressing our anger about what has happened so far, in a way, while we are making these demands, it's also an expression of faith in the state. You know, it's also a petition, because somewhere we still believe that there is the hope of justice. And maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. I change my mind about it every now and then, because you never see anything happening. You know, I mean, if we move this debate to Kashmir, I'm sure people there, students or ordinary people there, would look upon it as the beginning of a very long journey, you know, because these debates they must have had 10 years ago. Because today we are looking at a situation there, for example, where 7,000 or 8,000 unmarked graves have been discovered. And you have an association of parents for disappeared people where there are more than 10,000 people who have disappeared, which is more than in places like Chile under General Pinochet. You know, they didn't even bother to call themselves a democracy, but we do. And the answer of the state is, well, we can't tell you whether your disappeared family members in this grave, unless you tell us which grave. You know, so it's a extremely Kafkaesque situation. But what I just wanted to say was that we know that if you read this report, you will see some names. Like, you'll see the names of specific policemen like Rajbir Singh, ACP, or Mohan Chand Sharma. People whose names appear again and again in these false cases. Pacholi Saab knows them very well in terms of how many lies they told, how much evidence they fabricated. You know, they are both dead now. But the question is, is all this, as Jawahar was saying, you know, the point is not to convince people. The point is not to produce evidence. The point is not to say, we're going to try and produce real evidence to say that this is what happened to so-and-so. Obviously, the point is to use the system, the delays in the system, to terrorize certain communities. And I know that in this report, we are talking about the Muslim community. I don't know whether the reason that people are being picked up is because it's the Muslim community or because it's a minority that needs to be terrorized. You know, there are two kinds of terrorists in India today, or what the government thinks of as terrorists. There's the Islamist terrorist and there's the Maoist terrorist. And both are created by a particular way in which the state has decided to see itself. In the early 90s, after the demolition of the Babri Masjid and after the opening up of the free market, it's really interesting that preparations had already started to make India a police and a military state. If you look at the recruitment, the amount of police and security apparatus that has been recruited, the budgets that have been allocated, and what is going on, why is that so? I mean, the special cell or the Supreme Court or the trial courts or the people in jail could not do what they are doing unless society is also part of allowing this. You know, so one of the things that that we haven't spoken about enough in this meeting is the role of specific journalists in the media right from the beginning. You know, how they planted stories, how the special cell runs particular journalists. A lot of us worked quite a lot on the Parliament attack case, which Pancholi Saab and Nandita Haksar fought for S.A.R. Gilani. When the Supreme Court gave a judgment on Afzal, it actually said that we have no evidence to prove that he belongs to a terrorist group. But in order to satisfy the collective conscience of society, we are sentencing him to death. They said it. In black and white, in a final Supreme Court judgment, they said it. There was outrage from some quarters, but even today, when so many of us have pointed out, in the same way that JTSE has, bit by bit by bit, how the lies were built up, how the press had, the media had planted stories, how the custodial confessions were extracted, how, for example, in the case of Afzal, they had many confessions and they would pull out whichever one suited them at whichever time and they used it. But what I want to say is that when finally, you know, about 4 years ago, 5 years, they decided that they were actually going to hang Afzal, some of us brought out a book called The Strange Case of the Parliament Attack and mentioned all of this, including the judgment, the Supreme Court judgment, which actually set aside Afzal's confession in the police station. Mind you now, this is 7 years after the trial is over and so on. The Supreme Court said you cannot use a confession as evidence and set it aside. What does the media do? 7 years later, a secular channel runs that old confession video, say where Afzal is confessing. It doesn't say it's a confession. It doesn't say it's in police custody. It just makes out that, oh, he suddenly decided to confess because he's dying to be hanged tomorrow, you know. And underneath it says, you know, the SMSs are starting. Usko boti boti mein kaat ke kutton ko khila do ya lal chowk mein phansi do. You know, I mean, we don't need a Sharia state. We've got the people going on all this false news. And the Supreme Court has said you should hang him because of the collective conscience of society. And the media is creating that collective conscience. It so happened that journalist who actually produced this 5-year-old confession video from the special cell had been working in the Hindustan Times earlier. She had been exposed for lying in Iftikhar Gilani's case, in S.A.R. Gilani's case, in case after case of lying. What happened to her? She got promoted to a secular channel. She became a journalist in a secular channel. She got a raise and she got an opportunity to do much more dangerous stuff, and it's still going on, that, you know. So there's a collusion at the level of the courts, of the media, of all of this. Interestingly, I mean 4 years ago to now, today maybe, I remember going to the special cell, to the gates of the special cell with two lawyers after the boys were arrested and held in there. Just, you know, we just heard that it happened and we rushed there and said, you know, they have a right to legal opinion. You have to let us in. One of them was a senior lawyer, the special cell police. If you see them, they look like genetically modified human beings. they just laughed at us, you know, just get out of here. There's no question of them having any lawyer meet them. But what I want to say is one of the journalists who worked with us on the Parliament attack issue, who knew very well this story about the fact that you cannot produce custodial confessions as evidence. He left Tehelka and joined India Today. India Today has a different agenda. So the same man who knows the law wrote a cover story about the boys in Butler House saying, I just smuggled myself into the police station, you know, while the mob was around. And each of those boys with their evil, you know, hooded eyes and their wicked grimaces confessed to him that they had actually done it. And this was the cover story of the magazine with the biggest circulation, you know. So the way in which the stories are planted, now the same thing is happening. I mean, there are some of us, I sometimes wonder, you know, when I'm here in Jamia, then I'm supposed to speak about what has happened to young Muslims or young Kashmiris who are being killed, who are being tortured, who are being wrongfully detained. When I'm in, say, Hyderabad, then I talk about the Adivasis. But the fact is, you know, do we see a pattern here? Or, I mean, it's not necessary. I'm not saying everybody has to be a missionary and care about everybody else. But if we want to understand what's going on politically, if we want to move this beyond just complaining, beyond just petitioning, beyond just feeling sorry for ourselves and hoping that, you know, some sort of miracle will happen and nice people will come to government or nice lawyers will represent us. This is all very deliberate. It's all being done to keep us busy. You know, imagine all the young law students have to get together. When these boys are put away, then, you know, you see their papers. In Kashmir, everybody has a bag with papers, you know, of how their son was killed, how you went to this place, how so-and-so's disappeared, how, I mean, after they've been killed and disappeared, there's no mercy here. You know, no amount of petitioning or being noble is going to get us a solution to this, you know. So I think we should look very clearly at what are the lines along which this brutality is running, you know. Because if we are going to look at it as a Hindu versus Muslim problem, then tomorrow they'll turn around and say, what's happening in Pakistan? Are lawyers willing to defend people there in the minority or about blasphemy or whatever? It's not. It's not about Hindu and Muslim. It's about power. It's about how are you going to keep people distracted? What excuse can we have to have an increasingly militarized state? It's true. I mean, what's the difference in, I mean, Butler House has happened under the Congress watch. But in the election, they're going to campaign as a secular party. So let's just, I mean, I've said this many times, so I hate repeating myself, but I just want to put it down to you as a simple idea that in the early 90s, actually in the late 80s, when India became changed from being a non-aligned country to a completely aligned country, when it stopped supporting Palestine and became a natural ally of Israel and the United States, when it opened the lock of the Babri Masjid and the lock of the free market, of the Indian market, it unleashed and then manufactured for itself two kinds of terrorism. One was Islamist terrorism and one is what they call Maoist, but it's not Maoist. I mean, it's like I'm a, of course, prime candidate. After all, if you only have Islamist terrorism as your bogey, then what do you do with people who aren't Muslims, but who are also troublesome? So we are those people, right? So you create these two pools. Everybody who is a Muslim can be an Islamist terrorist, and everybody who is not necessarily a Maoist but who is resisting, no, not necessarily tribal. I mean, Binayak said is not a tribal, you know. So every, how do you deal with what you know is going to be a huge amount of unrest because of policies that you followed? So you create these two bogeys, and then you use those bogeys to militarize yourself. So whether it's the Congress or whether it's the BJP, you have an excuse to continue to militarize. So that is what is happening today. I mean, Zakia Jafri is 8 years old and she has to appear on TV, and you know, she has watched her husband being hacked to death. She's watched people, 65 people being burned. But you know, eventually after 15 years, if you get some kind of justice, you have to be grateful to the system that caused it in the first place. So apart from what suggestions have been made, which I think are wonderful, you know, about compensation, about legal aid, and about scrapping of the special cell, I just want to say that we need to look at this politically too, because it's not an aberration in our democracy. That's not what's happening here. It's a very, very clear political process which doesn't have technological solutions, or the solutions may not lie in petitioning the state that's creating the problem, you know. So how do we understand these things ourselves? How do we understand ourselves in this? You know, after all, India today is behaving exactly like a colonial state did in the First World War and the Second World War. Britain sent Indian troops to Africa, and you know, African troops to France, and all their various colonies they used to fight their wars. Today, you'll have the Nagas fighting in Chhattisgarh, you'll have the Tamilians in Kashmir. I mean, it was the most shocking thing for me after, you know, spending time in Kashmir, seeing what the terror the security apparatus creates there. The first time I started going to Dantewada, I passed a convoy of Kashmiri CRPF going to Dantewada. You know, so it's a colonial state that's using us, dividing us, keeping us busy. And, you know, of course we need to be thinking of the mitigating measures, but we also need to be thinking extremely politically on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Arundhati. Now we have time exactly for about two or three interventions. Please be brief.